This audio production is brought to you by TheBestDayEver.com, David Wolf's premium longevity member site.
The content found on TheBestDayEver.com from David Wolf and New Horizon Health, Inc. is for informational purposes only and is in no way intended as medical advice, as a substitute for medical counseling, or as treatment cure for any disease or health condition, and nor should it be construed as such because that would be illegal. Always work with a qualified health professional before making any changes to your diet, supplement use, prescription drug use, lifestyle, or exercise activities. Please understand that you assume all risks from the use, non-use, or misuse of this information.
Welcome, everyone. This is your host, Lucian Gauthier, and I am here with Dr. Robert Marshall, one of our key speakers at the most recent Longevity Now conference, where he delivered a fascinating talk on weight loss, how to find clever, strategic ways to lose those extra pounds, and the impact that those extra pounds had on our health. So I hope you can join us for watching that video in our video series on TheBestDayEver.com here. And Dr. Marshall, you're here today to talk to us about iron deficiency, iron supplementation, and sort of the ins and outs of iron as it relates to our blood cells and in our bloodstream. So let's kick this talk off with, just for people who are sort of new to the topic, how important is iron in our blood? What role does it play? What's the sort of basics?
Iron is responsible for the primary transportation of oxygen in the blood. It forms what is called a heme molecule or hemoglobin. Now, a human has an advantage over horses and other animals in that, in addition to hemoglobin, we biosynthesize ceruloplasm. So in addition to hemoglobin to transport oxygen, humans have another player, if we exhaust hemoglobin, that we can rely on to transport oxygen, and that's ceruloplasm, which is a copper-based transport system. But in addition to hemoglobin, the iron plays many other roles in the body. And so obviously our primary role is oxygen transport, but also it is essential for the biosynthesis of tyrosine. Tyrosine is an amino acid that's made from iron and phenylalanine. And you might say, who cares? Well, it's essential for us to make thyroxine. It's essential for us to make adrenaline. So if you're tired and you know you're iron deficient, you're going to be having problems with oxygen transport. You're going to be having problems with oxygen regulation, which is what the thyroid does, and you're going to have trouble with having enough adrenaline or energy through the day. So iron is really, really important.
Looking at two essential areas, one is a person who might have an iron resistance, meaning they're eating enough iron, but their body isn't able to uptake and utilize that iron. And then on the flip side of that, people who are just simply iron deficient, people who are not getting enough iron into their body.
Let's go to the first case where you're taking adequate iron intake, but the blood levels are low. This is a relatively modern phenomenon. And while it's my opinion, I think that our clinic substantiates the opinion, and that is that since we began eating enriched white flour somewhere around 1940 with the Mandatory Enrichment Act, we observed people who had iron buildup at the liver, a disease called hemochromatosis. We observed that that incidence before enriching white flour was 1 in 300,000. Today, it's 1 in 300, which means tens of millions of people have begun to build up rock forms of iron in the liver. In my clinical experience, I cannot substantiate this with studies yet, but in my clinical experience, when there is an iron buildup at the liver, there's a low blood level of iron. Now, this is going to mean trouble with your thyroid, trouble with adrenaline, and I have observed and spoken with medical doctors who have actually administered iron directly into the blood using an intramuscular injection, or in some cases, low amounts in an IV, and not change the blood level. And what we have observed is by giving copper, such as eating 6 or 8 organic apricots after you soak them 20 minutes or more, that after about 12 weeks, the iron level, and stopping all white flour. After 12 weeks, the iron levels have begun to rise to normal, which suggests to me that the copper antagonizes the iron stored in the liver and allows a shift in this ecology so that we can achieve a healthy blood level of iron. And for many people, this may mean you no longer need thyroxine, and it may also mean you have a lot more energy through the day.
And Dr. Marshall, for those people who aren't able to get enough iron, this whole idea of fortification, and I've even heard anecdotally people talked about, you know, back in the 50s even, that the recommendation was to cook in cast iron pots and pans to get iron into your body.
Yeah. Well, it would be good if you were a plant, because a plant is engineered to uptake rock forms of minerals and bind them into living compounds. Unfortunately, you're not a plant. As a result, you need a vehicle that's once living to incorporate these things into a matrix that you can use in your body. So if your iron intake is inadequate, let's say you're a vegan, now you have to be looking to things like prunes. You got to be looking to things that are rich in iron, maybe having beets. But I am totally opposed to a supplement of a rock form of iron, or using a rock, using a cast iron skillet to cook in. These are only going to deliver non-live source rock forms of the iron, and we are very inefficient at absorbing those, and they may actually, in my opinion, create some problems. See, rock forms of iron, if they're uptaken normally, are going to go from the small intestine to through the hepatoportal artery into the liver. And the liver really doesn't do well with rock forms of iron. So what we need is a living source. Now, there are a number of things that contain iron. Prunes are a really nice one. They taste good. You don't need huge numbers of them. And we do have women who are menstruating very heavily, and as a result may induce low iron levels. Things like prunes are going to be a slow go to get the iron up.
And Dr. Marshall, when we talk about fortification, this is something that's still, it's a little bit of a mystery to me, because, you know, if you look on any packaging, even if you buy a sandwich or a wrap, you know, luckily we're in the position where we get to see all that fortification in the label. It's such a huge thing, fortification, not only iron, but the folic acid and all the other things that they fortify with. Are those
synthetic B vitamins? Yes.
So are those rock forms of minerals, in particular iron? What's your understanding of where that's coming from? Like, is there like a big sort of fortification mix that companies buy that they just dump into their wheat flour? Like, how does that work?
Well, I think there's a great way to see this. If you go on YouTube, there's a guy that took a box of cornflakes, which is enriched. And of course, these cereals are very clever. They say no preservative, which is true. There's no preservative in the cereal. However, the lining of the bag is loaded with it, and by the time the bag shakes around with the cereal, there's going to be quite a bit of that preservative in the cereal. Very clever. But now let's come back to the iron. They took the cornflakes and they blended them, and then took a magnet and ran it along the side of the blender and gathered together the iron shavings that were part of the enrichment, then put them on a napkin. Wow. So in other words, that iron is iron shavings.
Wow.
And the B vitamins, of course, are from coal tar derivative resin. So what normally happens when the body gets something like this is it excretes almost all of it. It does the best it can. A little may get across, but it is considered, you know, by the excretion rate, it's obviously considered something the body really doesn't want. This is fortification at its worst, in my opinion. If we're going to do fortification, we should at least have a living source concentrate of some kind, not a something like this. And I know that what I'd be working on if I were a woman menstruating heavily, I'd be working to raise my blood levels of iodine, because often that will promote better health for the uterus, and you'll have way less bleeding. It's very clear from the most recent clinic experiences we've had that people, especially on the West Coast, are needing more iodine than ever before. And of course, a woman If she wants to promote the best health for thyroid, male and female both need iodine. And however, the female needs much more than the male because the health of the breasts and the uterus depend on adequate levels of iodine. And here again, I have seen people taking iodorol or Lugol solution. These are rock forms of iodine, and you could have a severe reaction to these, like iodine thyrotoxicosis, whereas if you got it from vegetables, like sea vegetables, and you were to get 1 to 3 milligrams, much less need, wow, that seems to do the trick. And if we look at the if we look at the cultures of Japan, the women have almost no breast cancer or uterine cancer, and in America, it's like an epidemic. So
that brings up an interesting point about the cofactors involved in iron supplementation in particular. And I guess one of the tricks would be to get all the cofactors that you need in a supplemental product to make the iron absorbable, up, you know, yeah, bioavailable and so forth. Let's talk about like some of the cofactors that are necessary in the plant world if you're getting it naturally, but then also, you know, talking about supplementation, because I know you've got an amazing iron supplementation product called BloodMax.
See, the first thing to remember is that if you do use an iron supplement, most of the iron supplements out there are going to be a rock form of iron called ferrous fumarate. Now, this guy is just a rock, okay? The compounding with when a plant uptakes iron, it's going to bind this in a matrix, a very complex matrix, so that when this hits your stomach, it can go right through the brush border cell. When it hits the small intestine, it can go right through. If it is picked up by the liver, it can immediately be used. It's not an issue of this thing, you know, creating so many problems. And the matrix for iron is very complex. So the larger the atomic structure, the more complex the binding becomes. And this is why you really need a food matrix. But the thing you need to remember is if you needed 18 milligrams of a rock form of iron, you wouldn't even need 1 milligram of the living source form because it's so efficiently uptaken and used. Okay?
Very interesting angle there. And when we talk about supplementation, what are some of the things in your BloodMax product that you included, and why did you include them, and where do you sort of source your iron to keep that bioavailability intact? And also, how does that relate to cell residence with your product, in this particular case, the iron?
First of all, every cell in every mammal on Earth is a semicrystalline matrix. So that means that it has an ideal resonant frequency. Now, when it is in harmony, when it's got all the nutrients it needs to function ideally, it's going to resonate at that ideal resonant frequency, okay? So when we make a supplement and someone, the target is to promote iron levels in the tissue, we are now going to look for compounds that are most easily used from an iron matrix, most easily used. So their levels are going to be very, very low, but they're going to be uptaken at 50, 60, 70% versus 1 or none, 1%, 2%, 0.5% from a rock form. About the maximum we get when we get calcium from a rock is maybe 5%. So, and that's much better absorbed, but it's not as complex, it's not as large an atomic structure as iron. So to answer your question, we're putting together the compounds that make it very easy for the body to uptake this iron. So levels are very, very low. And for the public, my favorite thing, of course, is prunes, because you can soak these. They have a fairly good iron level. They're fairly well uptaken. However, you need to remember, if you've already bioaccumulated a lot of iron in your liver, you need not take iron of any kind, even our product, until you've gone 2 or 3 weeks on apricots to try to antagonize the rock forms of iron that have been stored in the liver. And then after 2 or 3 weeks, begin our BloodMax and see if you don't see in a 12-week period a really good change in blood levels of iron.
See, this is really phenomenal information. This is why I always wonder why when you go to your normal MD in the doctor's office, they don't tell you this stuff.
There's no reason for them to learn it. They are critical care. And someone who has an iron deficiency is chronically ill. So there is no interest or care in our culture. You're not going to die from the iron deficiency. You're just going to wish you did because you don't have any energy and you need to take thyroid medication. And you're experiencing all kinds of things that that give you a poor quality of life, but you don't necessarily die.
And the insight to antagonize the iron in the liver with the copper is a phenomenal one. Would you also recommend perhaps doing some kind of a liver flush or a liver cleanse to try to get out any of those sort of rock minerals, flushing them out, sort of?
I'm a big fan of doing support for liver and gallbladder because every person that we see in our clinic, over 40, it usually needs help at the gallbladder. And that means they're going to need help at the liver, because if the gallbladder is not getting rid of the bile, you understand that the liver, its job is to produce bile, which will clear waste products the liver has collected from the food you've eaten. You know, when you eat, if you digested it well, the food hits your liver and via the hepatoportal artery, and the liver goes through to clean the food, and it goes through a process called phase one, phase two detoxification, and then puts all this junk that it's taken from the food into the bile. Now, those are salts that are suspended in the bile. They're maintained in suspension by vitamin B6, and in particular, the fat form of vitamin B6, which is the one that the FDA says is a drug.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, the probiotics make small amounts of the fat-soluble form. So now we keep the bile in suspension. If we don't, then those bile salts can back up and go in your bloodstream. And now the waste products are not cleared. So caring for the liver and the gallbladder, caring for the gallbladder cares for the liver. And I'm a big believer in doing maybe once every 2 or 3 years, 4 months of support for the gallbladder, where you do something like gallbladder nano at anywhere from 2 to 4 teaspoons, maybe 2 to 5 teaspoons a day of gallbladder nano, which is loaded with probiotic generated B6. And you do that for 4 months. And then after 3 weeks of starting, you do 2 coffee enemas per week with organic coffee. Now, when this is done, we see the most beautiful and radiant hair and skin, which tell you right away that now you're getting rid of the waste and the liver is not being forced to have this bile back up into it and then back into the bloodstream. And of course, in Chinese medicine, when that happens, they call you the angry person. So you don't have a very good quality of life. But to think that we would blow off rock forms of iron in the liver, I know of no study that would support that from a flush or from any of these things. I think we have to be clever at displacement and see, as the liver experiences copper, there can be an ionic exchange that would liberate the iron. That's about as good as you can do. That, at least, it's all that I know at this time.
And just to sort of wrap up this interview, I know doctors love talking about sort of genetics, and you know, they say that you have a gene for this and a gene for that. What's your opinion on sort of like genetic predisposition for things like anemia or iron deficiency? Is that a big factor, or is that something that can be overcome through lifestyle, diet, and so forth?
Well, there's a new scientific discipline called epigenetics. And what they're learning is that almost all the genes are what they call soft genes. Translated to English, that means that they can be expressed or suppressed depending on your environment and what you eat. So obviously, in the case of iron, I think it is very minimal what hardwired genetics would have to do with that. In fact, I think more and more we're learning that the genes are not hard. They're soft, and they very much depend on what you consume. Let me just make one observation for you that I think is so critical, and that is the fact that we as a culture eat cooked food, yet we're a mammal, and we're engineered for raw food. The simple act of eating cooked food without taking any hydrochloric acid or any other digestive support, a study in Medical Hypothesis, 1998, suggests that this will cost you a third of your lifespan. And it'll cost you because the hydrochloric acid your stomach makes is your methyl donor. And by squandering it on cooked food, you do not have adequate methyl groups to maintain great health for the cell. And here's the really interesting thing. Every meal, every time you eat cooked food without any digestive support, you lose 1,800 methyl groups per day per cell. Whoa. Now, had you eaten raw food, and you guys know a lot about that, had you eaten raw food, you would lose only 1,200 methyl groups per day per cell. So the simple act of cooked food costs you a third of your miserably short lifespan, and it takes away the quality years. So to me, if I have to eat cooked food, I won't consider eating cooked food. I'll go without food if I don't have betaine hydrochloride, again, a live source. And some pancreatic enzymes like amylase, protease, lipase, and the pepsin, the catalyst that makes CHCL work. So we recommend one or two quantum digest at the start of a meal, at the end of the meal, hydrochloric acid. And if you're poor and you can only afford one supplement, that's the one to have. Now, let me tell you the punchline. Here's the punchline. This comes back to the gene question you just asked me. Okay. As the cell demethylates, it begins to express potentially lethal genes. This could be an oncogene. This could be a virus gene. And the deck is loaded with them, 35%. So now, every time you eat cooked food without a digestion, after about age 25, 30, 35, you're playing Russian roulette. What's going to express and what terrible thing is going to happen to you? So when you're asking me the question of genes, I would say the gene deck is definitely loaded against you. And I would also say that if you're foolish enough to eat cooked food without taking digestive enzymes, you're playing a game of Russian roulette. You cannot possibly win. Okay, so I hope this gives you a little different reference point for the genes. So when we say that you got a gene that makes you anemic or whatever, I don't see evidence for that. What I see is you could wreck the deck by eating highly heated cooked food, especially fried food. But just to finish on this topic, I really think we need to reflect on the Swiss research where they developed an index called the leukocytosis index. This is a fraction, this is a white cell, and it markers an alarm on the part of the body. So they noticed that any food eaten that was cooked over the boiling point elicited an astronomical leukocytosis response. The body is making these leukocytes to trap and prevent the uptake of this food. In other words, you're wearing out your immune system. Meanwhile, you're demethylating if you don't take HCL, you're demethylating in order to digest that food. And finally, somewhere around 55, let's say 60, if you're a real tough guy, your HCL drops so low that every time you eat a meal, every time you eat a cooked food meal, the food is rotting, inundating your liver, overwhelming your immune system, gathering gut weight because the body's trying to hide this junk food. It's trying to trap it in fat cells, this rotting food. So you've created this hellish nightmare for your body. And still people live to 70 or 80. It's amazing they make it. But when you look at them, they're in abject misery. Now, if you don't want that, if you, the listener, don't want that, if you don't learn anything from today's talk, anything at all, do yourself one favor. Either only eat raw food, which is almost impossible in our culture to do, or carry with you betaine hydrochloride and some activator, which will transport more of the methyl groups back to your cell. It may be able to do that. And the betaine hydrochloride activator and digest. And don't eat another cooked food meal without having this. And you'll just see such a change in your quality of life. Those of you who are already in your 40s and 50s, you eat a meal, you have a little indigestion. You think you got acid indigestion. You don't. You have acid indigestion. That's your food rotting, forming lactic acid. You don't have too much hydrochloric acid. You've wasted it. And when you make this change, you need less sleep. You're stronger. You're more mellow. Life becomes valuable again. There's nothing more important than this. And all the other guys kind of fall in place like dominoes. And, you know, I don't know how to, this gene thing, you can see it gets me on my soapbox because it takes you so far afield what's going on. You know?
Well, I really hope our listeners were tuning in carefully to what you were saying, because there was a lot of real great gems there, especially with the methylation and also the enzymes that come from eating raw food, which, you know, yep. David has been a proponent for raw food for forever. So this is a great, great kind of angle to take.
Confirmation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's, you know, it's one of the reasons why we love having you at our events and speaking from the stage. You just really deliver some really crucial information for people. You know, for people listening now, we not only carry the Blood Max products on Longevity Warehouse, we also carry the Nutrition Quantum HCL and the Nutrition HCL Activator. So if you want to find all Dr. Marshall's products, you go to our homepage, click the shop by brand on the left-hand margin, look for Quantum Nutrition Labs, and then you'll find all of the products that we care for Dr. Marshall. And, you know, these products really came to us because we were looking for the best, and Rebecca was, you know, pregnant. She just found out she was pregnant. She wanted to take the best of the best, and that's how we got turned on to your products, and Dave loves your products as well.
Well, that's really, really great, and if you'd like to learn more, you might want to tune into our radio show. QNLabs.com is our website, and you can look up the radio times in your area and join us. You can call in with your nutrition and health related questions as well. QNLabs.com. Thank you so much for the opportunity to come to visit in my world, and maybe to bring a lot more quality of life to many of your listeners.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Marshall. We look forward to speaking with you soon.
This program was brought to you by thebestdayever.com. Thanks for listening.